You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Welcome to Lead to Soar. I'm delighted to be with Michelle Redfern and Erica Jefferson. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
So we've got a little free-form discussion that we're going to have today. And we've been talking a lot about our business partners in HR, what's happening in human resources these days. And I want to just throw out some thoughts related to HR and the AI discussion. So in 2018, the Wall Street Journal reported that nearly all Fortune 500 companies were already using automation in their hiring processes. So this is things like robot avatars interviewing job candidates and computer scanning keywords and resumes. We're like accustomed to that. But with generative AI and the LLMs that have come out, there's new sort of discussions that are happening. Let's talk about that a little bit. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing a lot of fear. Honestly, you've got a function, a business function that historically has not done a lot of analytics other than reporting EEOC information. And now we're talking about algorithms and LLM, and they're terrified, some of them, not all of them, of course, of is this going to, number one, replace my job, right? And then I hear, oh, but they'll never replace me because you're the human touch. And I would argue that ask a lot of these job seekers who, you know, haven't had a response back in their job search, what human touch? So I think they're rightfully concerned. The company's bottom line is always going to be to cut costs and generate more profits. So HR is not immune to being susceptible to being outsourced, replaced, riffed. It's just different when the riffing is happening from the referrers. So the folks that usually are the ones that are responsible for counting heads and determining who should stay and who should go are now on the other side of the table. And I think because they come from such diverse educational backgrounds, of course, there is industrial psychology, but I haven't seen like real, this is real training focused on the math part of HR. You're looking at the numbers, you're looking at the stats. And so I think there is a lot of concern by folks. I haven't necessarily done an official poll or talked to folks in SHRM about it, but I think there is a lot of concern. And I'd say on my side as founder of this organization, I'm concerned that folks that don't have a lot of experience with technology are going to be in charge of formulating and creating systems that are now going to be used to determine who gets hired. So before I could say, oh, this person, they seem smart. But now if the algorithm is telling me people with blue eyes and blonde hair are the best candidates, how do I as an HR person overcome that, right? So I think there is lots of opportunity for education, knowledge. This is a fearful time. It should be for job seekers and folks in HR. What's going to happen? We know what typically happens when you bring new technology on board. That first couple years, it's rough. A lot of bad things coming and are happening. And we've already seen some lawsuits, people suing their employers because they were unfairly let go based on an algorithm. No human interaction involved in the decision-making at all. So I think we just got to make sure that as certainly as technical folks that have a vested interest in making sure that people can use the skills and the tools that these companies are bringing to HR effectively. The goal should be to make the process easier, not more homogeneous.
And from my perspective, the things that I'm seeing and hearing related, but kind of not to the USA geography. There's certainly the fear and the wondering and what will this mean, etc. What I have seen is a lot of focus from the HR folks, and I'm using the broadest term, including organizational development, learning and development, etc., onboarding, around how to upskill the rest of the business. So how do we help our managers be better at AI or use AI, yada, yada, yada. So I think there's HR are acting as a conduit for other managers learning rather than saying, what do we need to learn? And one of the things that concerns me is that HR needs to be included in the upskilling process. And that upskilling is across a whole range of different things, not just be a convener and coordinator of other people's capability build. So that worries me. And look, I'm a sample size of one. And for the HR folks listening, you know, don't shoot me down in frames. But when I look at the ARI framework, so the Australian HR industry framework, I'm not seeing an overt call out around technology or technology advancement and technology enabling HR to be more strategic. And the truth is, technology will. And these emerging technologies for all of us are releasing us from the burden of repetitive task, but what they're also doing is increasing our cognitive load, because we have now higher cognitive load because we've got more complex tasks to focus on, including thinking about the future a lot more, because we've got a lot more time. Well, in theory, we should have a lot more time to think about not just doing firefighting on a day-by-day basis, but what is happening in the business and what do I need to do to position it for success 12 months and beyond? Because really, the runway for the next 12 months should be set, right? So that's what I'm generally observing.
I think, and to your point, you set this runway because you did your budget and your plan many months ago, but also having the leeway to adapt to some new innovative thing that shows up, right? If you're constantly firefighting and then something new shows up, you're just like, oh, just something else that I don't have time to do. But technology is supposed to make things easier.
Yeah, right. And it is fascinating because ChatGPT, of course, exploded onto all of our radars at the beginning, end of 22, beginning of 23. And I'm in a privileged position that I run two strategic women's development programs for a major employer here, major insurance company here in Australia. And the very first thing that one of the things that we do with those programs, they're 4-month long programs. We run two strategic projects with the cohort. So they've got to solve a real world problem for the organization during the time they spend with me. And last year, one of the first projects that they said is, holy hell, how do we get ready for AI? And it wasn't even get ready because it's off the leash and running, right? Because they're going, you can't use ChatGPT to answer a customer's question. Well, what do we do instead? Because that's a really... So HR, not just HR, a lot of us were caught napping around that. But how does HR start to think and act more strategically by being okay with releasing the large repetitive task bundle to say, how do I position the business and its people for success in 12, 24 months, 36 months, so on and so forth? And that's where I see there's a real opportunity here.
Yeah, and I agree that there is a lot of fear in a lot of the conversations that I'm hearing, and there needs to be a mindset shift here. Michelle and I end up talking about mindset shifts a lot. And I think the one here has to, in a great deal, come from executive senior leadership. Because if the message is only, how can we use these tools to do things faster, then problems will arise from that because we're kind of asking the wrong question, right? Instead of asking, how can we use this to do things faster and cheaper? How can we use these tools to help our people? How can we make the lives of our employees better by implementing some of these tools? And there's an interesting case that a reporter from the Wall Street Journal talked about. He heard it at the World Economic Forum. And so this is such a great example. An HR manager had an incident with a manager and employee where they weren't getting along, and HR couldn't really help and intervene. And HR asked both people, the manager and the subordinate, for permission to upload their chat log into an AI program to be analyzed. And they agreed and they did it. And what came out of that was that the program was able to identify the subordinate was asking too many questions, annoying the manager wasn't feeling heard. And I love what the reporter said about this. His name's Chip Cutter. He said, it's almost like AI as corporate psychologist. So I think some people, again, they have that fear factor of, I don't want a robot looking at my discussions with someone. But the fact of the matter is, if you're on your work computer using Teams or Slack, you are subject to your employer going through all of that stuff anyway.
I'll even add to the complexity here. ChatGPT is based on information that's it's culling from the internet. And folks really need to think about this, right? If you're putting that up on ChatGPT, you're putting this information on ChatGPT about your company. And this is like, there's so much here to be worried about. Someone else has access to that. And they've had cases where they've had to tell employees, listen, do not put things on ChatGPT. You're giving away trade secrets. You're asking questions. How should I run this experiment? Because you're just innocently wanting this information, but now it's in the system. There's so much information. And this is what happens when you're not knowledgeable enough about what you're doing. I have a quick story. I worked at a company, and Mel knows this, as engineers. I guess that's why we're so inconservative, because we're always like, well, what about that? That can happen. Did you think about that? And so this young engineer, I worked at an energy company. This young engineer had this idea that instead of putting temporary indicators, like serial numbers on a piece of metal that was going to go in the sea, that they would stamp it. So Mel knows this. Stamp means removing metal from something, right? So you've taken some metal out to put some numbers on. The average person would be like, what's the big deal? But now, Mel, you've weakened that point where you've taken that metal out. Now that is a source of potential weakness. And we're talking about tens of thousands of pounds of water under the sea. So the engineer was like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to stamp all this stuff. Did not realize that you've now created a whole new item that needs engineering drawings. Every single thing that you now modified needs new engineering. $200,000 worth of new engineering drawings would have had to be resulted. But they didn't know. They just had this idea and they only were looking at this little piece of it. And I feel like that's how ChatGPT is going to be in the hands of folks who are not educated. They're going to be like, oh yeah, for HR, well, let's see what other companies are doing. Meanwhile, you may be putting patentable or trademarked information out there, probably not so much in HR, for other people to have access to. So that's why it's so critical that we got to get the basic understanding to the hands of the folks who are making the decisions. That's HR. HR is the, to your point, Mel, about your story, if a manager comes about an employee and they want to do this, if that HR person is giving them insight or information they've got from ChatGPT or generative AI, is that correct? Legally right for the corporation or organization to support?
And interestingly, just to build on that or to provide more evidence, so our amazing co-founder and colleague, Susan Colantino, who has been doing lots and lots of stuff with artificial intelligence and all of the various bots, and she shares a particular platform that she likes. But things that came out really early on, and I remember this conversation happening in the Lead to Soar network. Hey, everyone, and it was a courageous ask. I've got a new position in my company. I need to create a position description. Does anyone have some templates for a blah, blah, blah? And one of our HR community came back and said, oh, you should use ChatGPT because that does great position descriptions. And then Susan came back immediately and said, just be wary because ChatGPT is really blokey. It's got a bias towards men, gendered language. So it hasn't been run through the gender decoder language or anything like that yet. Because, you know, the old sausage, you know, you've got shit in, shit out. So you've got all of the programming and all of the data that it is sourcing from is from fundamentally flawed data. Because guess what? This is what we're all working on, is to try and get better description, job description, so that more people will enter into the job market that you're trying to recruit for. So again, that advice was coming from an HR person. This is not to diss HR people, but the reality is we've got to start having our HR managers give us much better strategic advice. The other thing to layer of that, Australia has an extraordinarily complex industrial relations system. We have multiple awards. We have different, like America, different states with different layers of awards, health and safety, blah, 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 blah. So there's a lot of stuff for HR people to know, but how might they have a resource with that they go to trust and be trained in how to use that resource ethically, adhering to privacy and industrial relations laws. This is where I want to see them operating in that kind of stratosphere. For example, hey, I'm a strategic HR manager in my business. And what I'm going to suggest is that we create our own white label version of ChatGPT, where we've got absolute control about where the information's sourced from. For example, Fair Work Commission, blah, 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 depending what geography you're in. And my proposal is going to cost this much. So I've done some initial costing. Here's the benefit to the organization, including adhering to our risk, ethical, and privacy concerns. How does that look for a business case?
That would be amazing.
How good would that be?
Yeah, I want to tack on to that. So Reshma Shahjani, the founder of Girls Who Code and Moms First, she started a site, an LLM called paidleave.ai. And what that model is trained on is the state paid leave law of New York. And the meaning of the tool is so that people, in particular, maybe women who are about to have a baby, can go to this and access information clear to them on what type of benefits they're really eligible for according to law. So I just wanted to mention that. But then what you're saying, Michelle, about creating something in-house, absolutely. And I think that that's where we're seeing this go. So creating a chatbot that's trained on your company's policies and your company's benefits so that an employee, whenever they have a question, they can just ask the little bot. And that's going to happen. It's probably already happening some places and I just haven't seen it yet. So Erica, Michelle, I'd be curious to hear from you on some thoughts on this front, because it's not just the lower level workers who are worried about how AI could affect their jobs. It's also going to affect the HR jobs. What do you think is important for HR professionals to consider about their future?
I think in that regard, that was brilliant what Michelle was talking about, because you're going to see lawsuits. We haven't even scratched the surface. We're going to see more lawsuits than ever before, because you've got untrained folks working with technology they don't understand. As I said, I've already seen lawsuits, the state of Illinois, some other places around the U.S., where they're misusing the technology and they're not familiar with the law. Heck, some of the law firms are still struggling with trying to figure out AI and the legal confines. And that's not just going to open up, obviously, organizations for lawsuits, but industries. You've got folks that, oh, this is how we've always done it. Well, you've been doing it wrong. So now people are, I mean, this is a litigious society we have in the United States. So, you know, folks are going to be like, hey, I've got a whole new set of car ambulance chasing and car wrecks. I'm going to go after these companies who are not paying attention to what their folks are doing with AI, and they're not educating them on how to do it. So I think, to your point, it's almost got to be white labeled. Why would you buy something off the shelf or untested when your industry, especially when you're talking about something manufacturing or things like that, where not just the average safety or other average concerns, but safety concerns, right? I used to work in a plant that we had to do, I call it female training every year, but about the impact that the environment and the chemicals we were working with could have on childbirth. So to let that go out and say, or I'm just going to use what everybody else is using, I feel like this should be keeping CEOs up at night. Is we've got to get this done. We've got to do it in-house and lock it down. You've got to lock it down, because if you're going to, oh, you can just go to ChatGPT and get it, that's what they're going to do. And so not only are they getting, who knows, untested information, they're also putting your company information out there for everyone else to see. So this should be at every CEO conference at Davos or wherever the wealthy CEOs gather. They should be concerned about this. We know they care about stock price and share price and all that stuff. But this right here, that's critically important, because look how many HR people you have. So each one of those HR people could possibly be jeopardizing your company and open your organization up to lawsuits. Every single one could be doing that in their everyday. So I think this is critically important. They've got to do this.
I want to pull on that thread too about the culture of, is there a culture of overwork in HR? Absolutely. And I think the culture of overwork is prevalent anyway, but there's a lot of work, and that is generated by litigious societies, complex industrial relations and OH&S laws and things like that, particularly here in Australia. So is there fear driving folks to hang on to compliance-led activity rather than transformation thinking? And we talk about mindset, right, Mel? If my mindset is, if I fuck up, I'm going to lose my job, I'm not going to go for the optimization. I'm not never going to go for transformational thinking. So there's a role for everyone to play here. And part of that, and I always look at when a project goes live, I don't care what it is. If you're taking out an old system and putting in a new system, you don't do, well, I don't, I prefer not to do big bang, i.e. turn one off, turn one on. I want to do a cutover, right? Where you've got two systems running in parallel. So right now we've got a system, an HR system, that let's run it in parallel with a transformational HR system. And what that's going to take is a real mindset shift from all elements in the company, all people, decision makers, executive managers, non-HR and HR, to say, we need transformational HR. Yes, we're going to have to bring folks on that journey, and we're going to have to ask them to let go of some of that stuff that they used to do, because we're going to, oh God, I've got fireworks going off. So we've really got to ask ourselves, leaders, executives, you really got to ask yourself, if you're not happy with where your HR team is leading or not, as it may be, what do you need to do to make that happen? And for HR folks, I'm going to be controversial here. You're going to lose your current job. It's not going to exist in 5 years' time. Some of the stuff you're doing will not exist. In fact, it's stopping now. So how are you going to add value to your business partners, to the organization, and frankly, to your career? You've got to shift into the optimization, transformational mindset and build the skills around that. And that's tough. There is no manager in the world, no senior manager in the world right now that's not thinking about the future of work. Like, our workplaces are complex, and leadership is complex, and it's not going to get any less complex because the less complex tasks have been taken over by technology and will continue to be so. So that complexity, that cognitive load, we need to help everyone with it. But most particularly, I think we really need to weigh into how do we help HR become transformational?
Absolutely. So the conference board recently polled global business leaders about their top economic concerns. And the top three were essentially recession, inflation, and rapidly advancing AI technology. They're definitely thinking about the future and how this is going to impact their business. So I want to open a box here. Here's something that I've seen, particularly in the engineering space, and I have to imagine that this is true in science and technology spaces, is the leadership of these firms. It's usually comprised of men, and oftentimes the only woman executive that we'll see in an engineering space is either the finance person or HR, or occasionally a general counsel, right? So they're in these functions that are not the primary function of the business. So opening this a little bit more, lots of engineering leaders are so uncomfortable with anything to do with people, soft skills, empathy, et cetera. They assume that the human resources department, because it has the word human in it, is going to take care of all of those things. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, especially around what is the opportunity here when it comes to science and engineering, hard tech spaces, et cetera. What is the opportunity for HR professionals to guide the future of these types of organizations and making them better for the people that work there?
I think number one, even though HR owns the hiring and firing process and dealing with that, most times, if you don't understand the business, you're going to be at a disadvantage. I always would say I would take a business person that went into HR over just a regular straight HR person, right? Because it's so complex when you leave the HR department, right? There's things that they'll never understand. And so what I've seen in some companies that a lot of times are women, because we're very good at strategy, is they have a chief strategic officer, a chief strategy officer, right? So you're in the C-suite reporting to the CEO, but you're not, I won't say you're not burdened by the financial success of the firm. You're supposed to be looking 5 years out, 10 years out, and advising all departments, right? Whether that's the finance folks, the production operations folks, of this is what's coming, this is what impact it's going to have to our business, to our industry, to the profitability, to the ongoing concern of us. And I feel like that is a job for all the chief strategy officers that are men. I apologize. I am not saying you're not good, but I feel like that is a uniquely great role for women, because we are doing multiple things for multiple people all at the same time, right? You got to look at this and take this into account, think about this. So I feel like we've got to stop siloing, like HR only does this, finance only does this, because they're all interacting, right? You can't make any decisions on profitability without discussing, are you cutting? Are you hiring? And that's what I'm seeing. People are making decisions in silos. Like you see a lot of these tech companies. You can't pay 21-year-olds $200,000 a year for 10 years and then expect to be in business, right? So that's why you see a lot of layoffs in tech. They pay these ridiculous salaries that were not sustainable. They never thought, oh, we're going to run out of money one day if we don't continue to make more and more money. But what if you had a chief strategy officer who was like, hey, that's not sustainable? I'm sure some of these people who make $200,000 a year, who've been out of work for 2 years, would have taken 100 to still be working. So I feel like we've got to make sure that the CEO is supposed to be the captain of the ship, and all the folks underneath him are supposed to be helping him or her make the best decision based on the factors that they know. And this impending AI impact to so many parts of the business is probably going to sink some companies for a myriad of reasons, right? They're not advancing, or like I said, the work associated with potential lawsuits is going to impact their ability to continue to stay in business. They're going to be bought out. And really, these conversations should have been had 5 years ago, right? So if you're not having these conversations yet, you're behind. You're really behind. But I feel like letting HR, and they should be at the table because they have the most experience with all this information, but letting them be the only voice when it comes to this, I think it's going to be a mistake, because HR touches everything. They say that, but they really, you ask an HR person, well, what do you think we should do about our logistics costs? And they're like, I don't know. How the heck would I know about that? But you're supposed, I mean, that affects how many truck drivers you get, should hire. You should know. You should know about that. You should be privy to it. Maybe if you're not involved in the final decision, but you should know. But they don't. They don't. You have this, I only going to stay in this little box.
Erica, you are so spot on. And this is, I talk about this in our leadership programs. And Susan, in her book, No Ceiling, No Walls, talks about know your positional purpose. What do they pay you to do around here? And again, I had this group of women yesterday. I said, I want you to, no matter where you sit in the business right now, I want you to do a value stream map or a flow chart or whatever you want to call it, but put your role in the middle, then put their business's strategic and financial priorities out here, then the goals, and map your role to that. It will be directly or indirectly impacting all of those goals. And so HR, you will, because you're right. If we actually haven't got the best and the brightest people at the appropriate labor rate in the logistics sector, guess what? We cannot shift stuff, or we can't shift stuff at the right price point, which is going to impact profitability. It's also going to impact our reputation, because our stuff, whatever our stuff is not going to get to where it needs to get to in time. So that's point number one. Point number two, look at someone like Mary Barra. So CEO of Ford Motor Co. She spent time in HR. She had what we call a lattice work of experiences. Now I've got balloons. She's got a lattice work of experiences all over the Ford Motor Co. Started as an engineer, working on the line, you know, but she has spent time all over the company. So I've got to tell you, people need to spend time in HR. And they also need to spend time in all other areas of the organization so they can get a good view of it. And I think the third part of that is saying, strategic. How do we start to be more strategic? Because artificial intelligence is allowing us, should allow us to be more strategic, i.e. not playing whack-a-mole every day and every week, but saying, now, because I've got the repetitive tasks out of the way and I don't have to screen every resume because I've got something that's going to do that for me, but I've also programmed it with the values and the goals of our organization, because we've got our own, I can now be inclusive. I'm also going to make sure that we are taking a strategic approach. And that might mean, yes, I'm going to get our internal, our white label ChatGPT to be equitable. So it means I'm going to know all about DEI. Yes, I'm flying my own flag here, folks, but I'm going to know all about DEI so that I program everything to do with talent in our organization with an equitable lens. That's the stuff. So there's just such great opportunity here. But coming back to the first part of our conversation, we're facing into fear. I think we need to shift our mindset away from fear and say, what is the opportunity here? And what do I need to do about that? Because every single one of us, no matter what our roles are, we have to take responsibility for our continuing professional development. I heard a quote. I was delivering a keynote at a conference this week, and it's probably the most high-powered group of people I've been in front of for a long time. So high net worth individuals, family offices, family-owned businesses. And one of the executive chair of one of the businesses said, change is inevitable and people will have to move around and what have you. But my experience has been that when you're nailing your KPIs, there's always going to be a role for you. So what are your KPIs, HR? And how are you, and you know what? Not what was written on your job description when you were employed last month, last year, last decade. What do we really need you to contribute to this organization? Because when you do that, is always going to be a role for you.
We've got to get away from, I'll call it the regulatory, right? You're just checking boxes, right? You're filling out forms and submitting reports on the people and say, I'm empowered to make this organization better. And it doesn't have to be top down. It could be the middle manager in HR who's saying, you know, I've got some ideas. To your point, we've got to get rid of the fear. I've had HR folks tell me, no, I don't think it's a good idea for technical folks to be in HR, have engineers or scientists come over here and work. And I know that's pure fear. They know that we've got the analytical part. And then if it's a technical company, we've got networks of folks that we can pull upon to hire, and they don't have those things. But you have hopefully years of experience in human nature and how things play out, certainly the regulatory or reporting of labor information. And it should be something to embrace from other functions, right? I'm going to learn about finance so that I know how that impacts what we do. That's huge in a business. Labor costs is huge.
I actually don't know how you can be considered a strategic partner in the business. I don't care what your role is. If you don't know the numbers, just because you're going to make dumb decisions. Well, I mean, you might get it right by accident, but you're sure going to get it wrong by design if you don't know this stuff.
And I think that's what we're seeing. I think when you see these companies with these massive layoffs, now some of them, it's copycats, right? Some of these people, I was like, why is Nike laying off? Nike had a bad year. Like, what's happening? It's just copycats. Everybody else is doing it. So I'm going to lay off people too. But I feel like you really got to get folks in the room at the table who, like I said, I think maybe HR should be a rotational type job. You rotate in and rotate out. Take that information you learned from your previous jobs, bring it in, and then you take that information back to your business unit when you leave.
I love that, because every time, folks, think about when a new person joins your team, they ask lots of questions. I say, how can we do it that way? And I was having this conversation just the other day, and I think we talked about it recently, Mel. How can we do it that way? I'm not entirely sure. We've just always done it that way. Should we still keep doing it? That's what different lenses. That's what diversity. That's what diversity brings. You go, we've always done the XYZ process. That's a really good point, Erica. I'm going to go and ask more and see if we really need to keep doing that. Hello, there's innovation. There's innovation. So I love the rotational thing.
For these companies that laid off all these people, they're gone now. They're to the wind, hopefully in other roles. But what if these companies had taken those folks and said, you're now on a team to revolutionize our HR, right? So you'll still be in HR, but you won't be doing the same functions, because some of them, when you look at their backgrounds, where are they going to go? Where are you going to go? You have a degree in French horn. Who is going to hire you in the other business unit? The only place you could work is in HR. You can't get it. So why couldn't that be, especially, like I said, the ones who didn't need to lay off, they just did it because all their friends were laying off. Have a separate, call it a secret team, I don't care, but have folks who have the knowledge work kind of in stealth mode, but with other functions, learning and figuring out things that they can then rotate back. Okay. The storm is over. Okay. We're going to bring you back to HR. Why couldn't they have done that instead of laying off all these HR folks that they're doing? And I tell people, I was like, this is just the beginning. They're getting to the point where they understand the cost of this HR technology is high to implement, right? I don't know what it is, $200,000. But if you think I could use this for 5 years and I never have to do severance. So when hiring is down, I, you know, turn the lever. And when it's up, I turn the lever back on. You don't have vacation, sick days, any of that. That's coming. That's what the leaders want. Now, people can bury their heads in the sand and say, no, the human touch. They are trying to cut costs so that profits are high that they could put in their pocket. It's not going back to the business sometimes. It's going right in the pocket of the lead, senior leaders. But trying to get, because it's almost like fear mongering. You're trying to scare us. You should be scared. You should be scared. Now, how can you prepare yourself so you're one of the ones who survive? Because you have all this outside information from the different business units that you support. Spend some time. If you support the hiring and R&D folks, we're not expecting you to do research, lab experiments. But why is their work so important? Why do you have only PhDs here? What are some of the technologies that they're talking about are going to be blockbusters for the organization? Have some basic, they're going to have to expand to justify their existence. I always think of the secretary pool. Mel may be too young. She may not have experienced the secretary pool, but I remember when I was early in my career, there was a pool of women that all they did was type up letters, notes, make phone calls, and one day they were gone. And we were doing that, all that work, right? I remember when we got our first laptops, I was like, what do I need this for? They were like, because you're going to be doing all that work now. Expense reports, you're doing it. So I keep telling people, what if HR is going to go the way of the secretary pool?
Well, in another conversation, listeners, that Erica, Mel and I had, I talked about how I'm old enough to remember the tea lady. So the morning tea lady that would have a little trolley that would come around and make you a cup of tea and give you a biscuit. And she's never seen it.
Mel's never seen that. I didn't see it in the US. I saw it in Brazil. It's a cafe. They bring the coffee around. You're right.
100%. Yep. And you're right. These jobs become redundant. I think your question you asked there earlier, Erica, is how do I prepare myself for the future? Now, that's a question that all of us should always be asking. But for our HR friends, colleagues, you got to ask it. What have I got to do to prepare?
You're absolutely right. I've never seen a tea lady, and I'm glad that I've never seen a tea lady. I did interview a woman scientist a while ago who she's been in the industrial water space, did incredible things in the pharmaceutical world for treating wastewater. And she told the story of going to the wastewater conference, so the other WEF, Water Environment Federation. And back then, the assumption was that because she was a woman, she was the wife of the attendee. And so her name tag was like on a doily. So she had to like steal another name tag to like make one for herself that wasn't a doily, like wife of conference attendee. So listen, that woman is still alive. And that means that maybe we've come somewhere in women's issues, but we still have a long way to go.
We got a lot of stuff done when we had those secretaries in that pool. They made sure stuff was on time and accurate. So lessons to be learned from having all those old ladies, because there were young ladies in there.
Well, hang on a minute, but AI is the new secretarial pool.
It could be.
I hope we get there. Okay, one last thought here, innovation-wise, and I want to give credit here to Barbara Bruno, who is a guest on the podcast previously. This is so true, especially in a space like engineering, where we hear about talent shortages. I don't know if that's true, but if it is true, I believe it's only going to get worse. So what Barbara said is that companies need to have a chief retention officer. They need to have someone who is dedicated to the experience of the employees and driving up retention rates. So I think about with talent in that space, I think about the enrollment cliff that's coming up, which the universities are talking about, but I haven't seen companies really thinking about this yet and how it's going to affect, at least for a couple of years, the number of graduates that are going to be coming out of college ready to work for you. So that's on my mind, but I would love to see something like the idea of a chief retention officer spread. And maybe that's one way that some HR professionals out there could step up and really make their work about helping other humans, make it about the human touch.
That's going to have to be a different type of HR person. And maybe there are some folks in HR that have been longing to do that type of work, but a role didn't exist because you've got folks who are, I call it regulatory, but that's not the right word. They're responsible for making sure this matches this. And you do have to have a level of compliance. Thank you. That's the right term. Compassion when you're trying to figure out what is it going to take to keep these people here when the economy is bad, when we've got to riff folks, or when we can't do pay raises and people still want to work here. It's because they believe in what they're doing. And they're excited to be contributing to something important, right? We used to have that back probably in the 70s where people like, I work for NASA and we're going to, or maybe 60s, put somebody on the moon, right? I don't know if we have that in many industries anymore. People are like, it's just paycheck. I just need to pay my bills. And so I think that would be a great idea, but it's got to come out of the typical head of HR is going to be like, we're not going to spend money to make sure our employees work here. They should be happy to work here. So you got to get rid of that old mentality that you should be grateful for a paycheck. Well, I'd be grateful for a paycheck at a lot of places. I don't have to be here and being grateful.
Oh, louder for the people in the back.
Exactly. I can go somewhere where they appreciate me. Okay. So
I want to build on that though, because I think it's a really good point. We need the strategic thinkers in HR, just like we do. We need a whole range of people in every business unit in the organization. But you know what? We have to have executive managers create the space, the safe space, the air cover, the budgets to fund those roles and not get them bogged down with compliance and transactional stuff. There have to be thinkers in our business. We have to have thinkers, not just transactors. And those thinkers in every business unit need to be given the air cover to think, to come up with plans and plots and strategies and technology. So HR's not, should not be excluded from the thinking.
I think one last point on that. And I say, we've got to teach. Everybody's always asking me when they want to work with us, what's your ROI? Luckily, I got an MBA, so I know what that is. But we've got to teach folks who are doing this type of work to be able to calculate their ROI. You've got to be able to say, because we did this, this is going to be the impact to the business in a financial aspect. You've got to start teaching folks that. Right now, they don't know. They don't know. They just know, well, we cost this much and it's so hard. It's intangible. How are you going to calculate that? You've got to figure out a way to do that.
I've got to tell you, I couldn't agree more, Erica. And I'm going to do an absolutely shameless plug for my book. Read The Leadership Compass, because when you read leadership that gets results, leading for outcomes, you'll learn that you've got to not only deliver the outcomes, you've got to be able to talk about them as well. And the outcomes are what's going to make your business move forward.
Exactly. Brilliant. Everybody get that book.
You can find it at michelleredfern.com, FYI. Okay, I think this is a great place for us to wrap. So I want to speak right now, HR professionals out there, executive and senior leaders out there. This is the beginning of a mini series that we're going to do, speaking directly to you. And Erica Jefferson here is going to be a big part of that. So stay tuned. There's going to be more conversations like this to come. final note here on the AI topic. There was a 2023 Gartner survey that showed most organizations are open to adopting new AI tech. At that point in 2023, it was 85%. And at this point, 2024, I'd be shocked if it weren't closer to 95%. So change is upon us. Let's embrace it and make good things happen.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
Cheers to all of that.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.